Okay, recordings are started.
Fantastic, thanks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the SCI meeting on the 5th of May at 1800 UTC. On the call today, we have Lawrence Alawala-Roberts, Renata Aquino-Ribeiro, Rudy Vansnick, Ann Aikman Scalise, Wolf Ulrich-Milpin, Angie Graves. We have apologies from Amar Al-Sadr, and from staff, we have Julie Hedlund and myself, Michelle DeSmiter. I'd like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. And over to you, Rudy.
Michelle, this is Julie Hedlund. I noticed, I think maybe you missed her, but Sarah Bakke has joined as well.
I just saw her name. I apologize, Sarah, but we've added you to the list. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Julie. Rudy, for the transcript. Welcome all to the SCI call. We just had a little discussion on some technical issues about getting the calendar invites, and I know that the staff will take care of this for the future. I know that there are some ICANN mail issues with the domains. Some mails are not arriving in a correct way, but that's another issue. Let's come back to our agenda of today's call. As usual, I have to ask the members of this committee if there are any changes in the statements of interest. I think there are none so far, so we can move forward with our agenda to the number three on the agenda, the full consensus call for the GNS operating procedures, they were discussed previously, and we moved the deadline to the 25th of April. We didn't receive any observations or comments on that call, so I think that with that we can conclude that full consensus is final now, and that it will move forward with then the other issue that we have to handle, which is the discussion of the sub-team B, the chair and vice chair elections, where we had a lot of discussions in the last call already. And thank you, Julia and Michelle, for bringing up the items that we discussed and the action items we had agreed on during that call. I don't know if there is any discussion that we need to have on what is proposed as text now. Maybe, Anne, as you have been leading that team, do you have any input or comments or proposals?
Thank you, Rudy. This is Dan Aikman Scalise from the IPC for the transcript. And I believe that in our last call, there were a couple of issues that, although I came in late on that discussion, one of the issues that Amar had raised, one I think was dealt with on the list, and that had to do with the whether an incoming council member could be elected as chair, and I think staff went back and determined from our prior work on the team and prior review with the full SCI, I believe, in Morocco, that an incoming member is eligible to be elected as chair, and that was previously documented. So I think that's a settled issue based on what I see on the list. I guess, staff, if you have anything additional to say about that, go ahead and raise your hand. I think it was clear on the list. And then another issue that arose in the last discussion was the question whether it was really necessary for a house to have the ability, in the event a chair is not conclusively elected, to appoint a new interim vice chair rather than the one that would be continuing on council in the situation where there's a vice chair for that house in place who is continuing on council. And I think Amar raised the issue that this might just be an unnecessary complication. So I agreed to take that back to IPC, where the original request came from. And I did get a couple of comments with respect to that, but I don't know what Amr found out on the his consultation with NCUC. I don't know what others feel about this. I would say that it's a point that IPC is not going to stick on, so I would like to ask for others to weigh in. I think it's an IPC preference, but I don't think that they want to block a consensus on this point if we are otherwise, you know, going to be ready to develop consensus. So I see Wolf Ulrich has raised his hand, and I guess since I'm talking about this, I'll go ahead and recognize him.
Yes, hello. Wolf Ulrich speaking. Thank you. I was also the one, you know, chiming into that discussion on the list, and I was of the opinion, I'm still of the opinion, that it is... it could be complicating, you know, if we go back. You know, my position was on that. Why shouldn't we just take, you know, the incumbent vice chairs, so as they are? Because if there were any problems with those vice chairs, you know, from the House perspective, that should have been raised earlier, not just at the opportunity of the chair election. So I guess there will not be any problem at that time. So, and that was for me the reason why I said, you know, it's not necessary to. But I would really point on that, say, okay, it's not necessary to re-designate a different vice chair in this case. So I would favor, you know, to leave it as it is and to leave the incumbent vice chairs for just for that purpose. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. Are there others on the call? I know that, Rudy, you were probably at the intersessional meeting in L.A. where a discussion of rotation of vice chairs within the non-contractor parties house was discussed. Do you have any thoughts on this? Or I know, I think, you know, for sure that Wolf Ulrich and Amr would say, hey, it's just an unnecessary complication. But I just wondered, Rudy, since you were at that meeting in L.A., did you have any thoughts on it?
Thank you, Anne, Rudy, for the transcript. I join Wolf Ulrich here. I think it is already an extraordinary situation that we are not able to elect a chair. So in that case, I would rather try to keep it simple and allow the vice chairs to continue doing the job till we got, especially for scenario one, to get the job done so that a chair can be elected. If we make it a bit too complex, we could easily end up in other scenarios where the complexity can only grow. So I would prefer that we keep it as such rather than trying to integrate some discussions again that would not allow to have a fluid transition to the new chair.
Okay, well, my instructions are not to block over this issue if that's the general feeling of the majority. And so I think these are the instructions I have from leadership, and I'm assuming that, you know, this is not something that's going to become a big issue when this is put out for consensus call. So I will Rudy, is your hand up again?
Yes, thank you, Anne, Rudy, for the transcript. I'm not pushing back on proposals that are coming from other groups. I'm just wondering. I think it was the first time that we were not able to elect a chair. So the chance that it happens again, well, indeed it can happen, but it looks to me that in the cases that we have the vice chairs being there, if they can act together, I don't see any issue, except if you have, of course, the other scenarios. But on scenario one, I think it's something that can easily be solved by allowing the two vice chairs to oversee the process itself, rather than having discussions on who of the two of them can eventually do it or not do it. So that's the reason why I'm wondering if we need to put more complexity on scenario one. Maybe in the other scenarios, that's a difficult point. That's something that maybe you have some other visions on it.
Mm. Yeah, well, thanks, Rudy. Again, this is Ann, and I think that we can probably just wrap this issue up in the sense of being able to delete the provision in the draft that would allow a House to appoint a new vice chair rather than stick with the interim vice chair that is continuing on council. Again, there's not strong opposition. It was a suggestion from IPC that was based on those intersessionals in LA, but IPC does not want to hold this up over that single issue. So I think that we can instruct staff to delete that option. Julie, Mary, is that clear? Are you okay with that? Go ahead, Julie.
Hi, this is Julie Hedlund. Yes, so just to clarify, so and I think that this is also then sort of the next step with all of this language is then we have the language proposed for the various scenarios, and you know, for scenario one, then the current proposed language is in the case where no chair is conclusively elected, the two vice chairs shall jointly oversee the chair election and conduct council business until such time as the new chair is elected. And same with the other scenarios, then there would not be any change then to proposed language to reflect the option, that is the IPC proposal, so since the proposal is withdrawn. Is that correct?
That sounds right to me.
Thanks so much, Ann.
Again. Okay. And then I think one other issue that I recall had to do with the situation in scenario four, where what if one of the houses in scenario four, where both vice chair positions are vacant, what if one of the houses fails to support? And I think fails to appoint a new interim vice chair to serve. And the issue became whether option four kicks in even if one of the houses does go ahead and timely appoint an interim vice chair. And so I also did check with IPC leadership on this. I don't know if others were able to check, but I think our thought was as well that the one vice chair that's timely appointed could proceed to preside over necessary council actions and the elections, even if the other house fails to timely appoint, and that we would not default to the non-com as long as at least one interim vice chair in scenario three was appointed. And I probably made a mistake in the reference. I'm really talking about scenario three, because we're talking about two open vice chair positions and the possibility that one house fails to timely designate a vice chair. Do we then move to scenario four, or does the one vice chair who is timely appointed then assume the responsibility as interim vice chair for purposes of the election and for conducting council business. So IPC would be fine with the one vice chair conducting that business and the election, and then I'll ask others to comment. I see Rudy's hand is up and Volfori's hand is up. So, Rudy?
Thank you, Anne, Rudy, for the transcript. Well, indeed, and reading the text, maybe it's good if we make it really clear that if the other house is not able to timely appoint another vice chair, that the appointed vice chair of the other house will lead the process in order not to block the process. That's, to me, something that seems fair, but I'm a little bit missing it in the text, in how we can eventually make it clear through the text that the appointed or designated vice chair by the one house will lead the process independently of having another vice chair from the other house assisting. But I would like to hear from Wolf Ulrich also what he thinks about.
Yes, thanks. Wolf Ulrich speaking. I think this case, you know, you could also connect it to a scenario two, if I recall that correctly. So because, you know, it could also happen, and in scenario two, if you have the chance, you give the chance to the House as well to designate one of the vice chairs, because scenario two says there is one chair, but one chair, vice chair is incumbent and the other one is to be designated. So if this one is not going, if it's not possible by this House to designate a vice chair, so you will have the same situation as it could be in scenario three and scenario four. So I think we should take these three into consideration for this case. And I would say, you know, this is a very unlikely case, or you know, the likelihood is less than in other cases. So and I would just well also to say that we should take into consideration what we are doing here and what the council is looking for. The council is just looking forward to get the election performed, of the chair performed. So that means this is the main target, the main issue these guys should deal with, even one vice chair or both of them. So I would really say, from my point of view, if there is no possibility at the time being, well, In that time for the House for this purpose to designate a vice chair, then we should run with one vice chair to go for the election. I recall, you know, we are doing the election, you know, before we start all these problems, you know, if the vice chair, the chair is not elected in the first round. So how the chair election is done in that case, it's just only run by one person. This is the former chair of the council. He is running, he is doing the work. In our last case, it was Jonathan. He was doing by his own, you know, the election. So why shouldn't, in such a case where one house is not able well to designate one vice chair, in that case, it be done by the other guy, just for that purpose. So that's my question. Thanks. And my position. Hi.
Rudy?
Yes, sorry. Thanks, Rudy, for the transcript. Well, if it's only for elections, I would say yes, no problem. But the question, it's not only elections at the end, it's also running the council business. As long as there is no chair elected, it's the task of the remaining vice chair, if I may say so, to take care of the business also. It's not just elections. Elections, in fact, if you're one or two at the end, you have to follow the procedures that are in front of you, and you cannot change them. You have to adopt them, point. But running the council business is a different issue. And if there is no chair elected, we need to take that also in consideration. And what's going on if the other house doesn't appoint another vice chair? That's probably one of the issues that are in the sidelines of this discussion about the chair and vice chair elections. I'm just wondering, I don't know, Anne or others, if you have any ideas on how to tackle that one. Yes, Wolf Ulrich, you have your hand up, you have the floor.
Yeah, thanks, Rudy. Wolf Ulrich speaking. So my question here is, if that is so important that two vice chairs should be available at least in case for doing the usual business for the council, in case there is no chair, then why shouldn't we impose such a kind of condition? To say, okay, in case there is just one vice chair, then he has to deal with the election, nothing else. And business is going to stop for that period of time until a chair is going to be elected. So in order to impose a pressure on the council to go forward, to moving that thing forward. So if that is the case, you know, I think we could put forward that discussion also to the council, not just here in the SCI, but then put it forward, this question, to the council and saying, okay, in that case, so we have a solution for the election that could go forward with one vice chair, but the usual business, it should be done with at least two persons. And so that would mean in retro direction, so that there is no business, no other business than just the election during that period of time. Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. Well, I'm a bit referring, and I see Julie already popping up her hand. I would like to refer to our specialist in ICANN staff, Julie Armeri, to help us here. If that's part of the duty that we need to consider also. So, Julie, you have the floor.
Yes, this is Julie Hedlund. So Mary and I are conferring. I think that I would say for myself anyway that this is certainly a new wrinkle, and I'm just wondering if there is a simple way that we could address this. I'll note what Wolf Ulrich said, which was perhaps if we want the council to act expediently, then perhaps what we do is limit the work of the, you know, continuing or interim vice chairs to overseeing the chair election and delete the language relating to conducting council business. Now, we have in scenario 2, 3, and 4, you know, the indications that, you know, in 2, for example, you know, there's, you know, one vice chair is continuing, other is ending, so we have the interim vice chair that will join the continuing vice chair, and we could simply say to oversee the chair election. Then, you know, we have, scenario 3, neither of the two vice chairs, so then we need the interim vice chairs, again, just to do the business of running the election until the chair is elected for, again, the NCA overseeing the election. I'm just wondering if perhaps there's, you know, we have been going back and forth on this language for now quite some time, and we now have 4 scenarios, which we hope will cover every possible eventuality, even those that may never occur. I'm just wondering if there is a simple way that that we can address this.
Thank you, Julie. Rudy, for the transcript. I agree. For elections purposes, I'm rather feeling good, but I'm thinking about if there's something written down in the procedures that defines that as long as there is no chair elected, that the business is continued by the vice chairs, and that there is a need for two vice chairs to be able to do the business. That's rather a question that I still have, but I see that Lawrence has put his hand up. Yes, Lawrence, you have the floor.
All right, so this is Lawrence for the records, and I'm thinking now what the difference in scenario two and three would be. In the second scenario, there is one continuing vice chair who has some experience, who has worked with the leadership that is facing out, so to say. And aside from the experience in conducting council business, asking the other house to nominate an interim vice chair to sit with that person to sit through an election will basically give us the advantage of a balance. So I believe that if after the 14 days that we talked about, that we stated, if there is no nomination from the other house, based on the fact that there is a sitting and continuing vice chair, I believe that that person could help with delivering an election and also see to the continuation of council business. In the third scenario now, there is no continuing vice chair, and so the two persons that are expected to come from the different houses definitely are green and will be coming in to basically help with the election. And like you said, because of the timing, there will also be a need to conduct council business. So if a house doesn't now designate someone, I believe, I'm just thinking, what could be the possible reasons for that? Could it be that one, they might not be comfortable with the other internal vice chair nominated from the other house? Or could there possibly be some other issue that has made it quite impossible for that house to agree? I think the difference that the SCI could then bring in between scenario two and three is I'm just thinking now that if one of the houses fail to nominate an interim vice chair within the 14-day that we are looking at, then possibly the NOCOM appointee could then step in, since that condition has not been fully complied with. Otherwise, we might just need to collapse two and three together if we still see. I mean, because then I guess there might not actually be a difference, except for the fact that one is a continuing vice chair, and in the third scenario, you know, both of them are together. So I think to maintain a difference and to also maintain a balance. If one of the conditions in scenario three is not met, then maybe we still proceed with the fourth scenario. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence, for your comments and your input. It is indeed, to me, the question that is on the table is focusing only on elections. The issue of the council business in itself seems to be covered somehow in the actual procedures, except that there is probably no information mentioned about the need of two vice chairs, that's probably something. But that's an issue that we could bring in the sidelines to the council and ask if they want us to consider that element in the whole process. And with regards to the, as elections are essentially following procedures, there is no side discussions that can allow to change the procedures of the elections. So the rules are really clear. And is it one or is it two vice chairs? I rather think that wouldn't change anything at the end. In order to allow to have fluid elections and allow to have a chair as quickly as possible, so not to block the council work, I would suggest that we avoid having big discussions on the need for an absolute second vice chair. But again, I'm open the floor to discuss this. Could we eventually just go for if there is no second vice chair, the process goes on. The council business is a different issue. Wolf Ulrich, I see you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Thanks, Woody. Wolf Ulrich speaking. Well, as usual, in our group and other groups, we are talking about all kinds of scenarios, and also the more unlikely ones, and which we don't wish to happen. So, that's how we are working. Okay. So, but in this case, I would say the last time as well that we discussed and said, okay, that is really unlikely from our perspective right now that there is no, that the houses will not be able to elect or to designate vice chairs. So we saw that as a really not very big likelihood for that case. So why shouldn't we just end the discussion here with the text as it is at the time being, put that forward to the council, and also with this accompanying text, saying what we discussed, and especially in this case, and we can see on council level what's going to happen. So whether the council is taking that as an issue, a real issue, and saying okay, it should be decided, and they come up with a certain proposal for that. I would say we should leave it as it is at the time being and then move forward. That's from that discussion, but not close our eyes. We put also forward this discussion to the council and say okay, with the question, should that be solved right now or not? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Wolf Ulrich, Rudy, for the transcript. I'm following you fully and agreeing, except that I think, if I'm not wrong, the first step would be, or the next step would be, that we first have a full consensus on the proposed text, and then we send it to the council. But I'm referring to Julie. You have your hand up. You have the floor.
Rudy, thank you. This is Julie Hedlund. The procedure is that next staff would put this into sort of the formal GNSO operating procedures language. I mean, we have language here, but we need to indicate where it would fall, in the procedures. It certainly would fall in the Section 2.2 officer elections. So we would place the language appropriately in there, and also the timeline that we had separately discussed, and then that would go out for a consensus call to the SEI, and we could first we would send the language to the SEI. We could discuss if there were any questions and concerns about the language at the next meeting. Then we could send the language out, a final version out for consensus call. Once that's complete,
this language and the language relating to the proposed revisions relating to motions and amendments, where we have closed the consensus, both this language and that language, these revisions to the operating procedures would then go out for public comment. Once that was complete and any changes relating to that were incorporated, then both of these proposals and the revised language in the procedures would go to the council for consideration.
Thanks a lot, Julie, Rudy, for the transcript. That was what I thought also, that was the process that I had in mind. So to try to finalize on the discussion here now, can we agree the pass over the text that we have in front of us on the Adobe, that the proposed text would be integrated by staff in the procedures in such a way that for our next call we could do a revision of the text and try to get into the status of the full consensus call so that that process could be closed. Can we agree on that staff will take this text integrated in the GNSO procedures, bring that text forward, probably on mail first, so that we take it up at our next call, go through it, and finalize the discussions. Is that a way forward?
Yes, this is Anne for the transcript, and I just was reflecting my agreement in Adobe on behalf of IPC. I think that's the way to proceed, and I see also that Wolf Ulrich is checking the agree. I don't know if we want to ask others to indicate in Adobe their agreement to that approach. Rudy, I see, is agreeing, and or if there are additional questions, if anybody would raise any questions they have. But I guess, Rudy, you can see what's going on in Adobe there.
Yes, well, we have five green tags, which is 5 on 8. I don't know if Lawrence has the ability to flag. I'm looking in the chat also, but I don't see any objections. So I think we can consider that as an approval, that we can move forward now with that text and pass it over to Julian and Mary so that they can start their work and producing the next version of the 2.2, if I'm not wrong, in the GNSO procedures. We would then probably have it on the mailing list so that we can go back to our communities and eventually ask for approval. So that at the next call, we would have the chance to validate it finally and see if we can get to a full consensus call. Julie, I see you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Yeah, just to confirm then, this is Julie Hedlund. So we'll go ahead and incorporate the language into and the timeline into the operating procedures. We'll send it to the SEI list. But my understanding is that we're not sending this as a consensus call, correct? Because this would be the first time that anybody would have seen the actual language and how it fits into the operating procedures. I mean, the way we did it in the last item is that we, after Marrakesh staff incorporated changes into the operating procedures, those were discussed in the SCI, and then and then they went for a consensus call. And I see Anne is agreeing with that. But I do notice that Wolf Ulrich has an interesting question, and that is, how do we fit this into the Helsinki meeting? And just looking ahead, the next SEI meeting would naturally be in 2 weeks on 19 May. I would think that, if we could finalize the text, not later than the 19th, send it out for a two-week consensus
call, then that would get us into June 2nd. Then we, just looking at the timing here, then we would go out for public comment. The public comment period would fall over the Helsinki meeting if we do the usual 30 days. And I think that is the minimum. So then I think it would not be teed up for the GNSO Council to consider until after Helsinki. And yes, and in one way or another, we do have to, as Ulrich is noting in the chat, public comment is a must. And yes, we do always have to put any changes to the GNSO operating procedures out for public comment. And we recently confirmed as staff that that step actually does take place prior to submitting a motion for approval of the revisions to the GNSO Council.
Thank you, Julie. Yes, that was my understanding, too. So the first is that we have a new text that will be discussed in the SCI first, and then if we agree on that text, we will go for a full consensus call. And it will be difficult, indeed, to get it into the Helsinki meeting. Anyway, I just got today a mail from Glenn with the actual schedule, and it looks really complex to get meetings scheduled in it. I still have to figure out how I'm going to do my constituency day meeting with what's on the table today. And I think that the public comment period needs indeed at least 30 days. I was wondering, is it 30 or 45? In some cases, I know it's 45, but I'm not able to figure out which one. And I see you have your hand up, and then we have Wolf Ulrich also. Anne, you have the floor?
Yes, thank you, Rudy. This is Anne for the transcript. I am somewhat concerned that it would be good to try to back up from Helsinki and see, I guess it depends on what sort of public comment we get, but what I'm sort of wondering is whether if we scheduled an extra call 1 week from today, if anyone were able to do that, would we have a possibility then of a short period for a consensus call and then a 30-day comment period prior to Helsinki? I'm just not sure exactly how the dates work out. And so that is my question, whether the situation could be moved forward since we already have agreement on our other issue. And since we want to put both of these out for public comment at the same time, is there any way to meet, putting it out for public comment 30 days before Helsinki? Thank you.
Thanks a lot, really for the transcript. But I see, Julie, maybe you want to answer or reply to Anne?
But I do see that Wolf Ulrich has his hand up. I can defer to him.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
All right.
Yes, sorry.
Yes, thank you, Wolf Ulrich speaking. Well, my question is maybe...
Wolf Ulrich?
Yeah, Wolf Ulrich speaking. So my question could be answered maybe on Julie as well. So I'm wondering how we are dealing with that right now, with the public comment period. Are we going, as SCI, about putting that forward, all these things, to the public comment period, or is it the council who is going to put that forward? Because have been mandated by the council. So my question is that, don't we have a chance, to discuss the status, at least on council level, before we put it to the public comment, and that is, related to the very last question we discussed with regards to the whether one vice chair is just available or two vices are available. So I would like, if that is possible, to discuss or to ask that question to the council before we go for public comment period. So that's not clear to me right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob Ulrich, and I'm handing over immediately to Julie to give some answers to your questions.
Yeah, this is Julie Hedlund. So, as I noted in the chat, we do normally do 40 days, and it is the SEI that puts these out for public comment. But I will note that the SEI does have the opportunity to provide updates on its work to the genus of council at any council meeting via its liaison, in this case, AMR. And I see that Mary has her hand up, too, and probably has something to add here, so I'm going to defer to her.
Hi, everybody. This is Mary. Julie, thank you very much, although I was actually just going to follow up on your comment by noting that with the Helsinki schedule, it's not clear what the council's meeting agenda will be. There is a slot for a GNSO council meeting, which could and most likely will be conducted as a regular council meeting, but that's not necessarily guaranteed, although I expect that it's not going to change too much. But there isn't going to be the weekend update sessions or a session for the SCI. So given that the customary period for public comment is 40 days, and given the, you know, all the other considerations, which is why we package all our recommendations to go out all at once, I think from the staff perspective, we are not, you know, necessarily sure that it would be necessary, sorry to repeat the word twice, to, you know, basically rush to have everything all tied up in a bow in time for Helsinki. Not that we shouldn't want to do things expeditiously, but, you know, there may need to be a discussion as to what specific reason we might have, as opposed to just going through the regular periods and channels. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Mary and Julie. Well, with the schedule that I received today, I see that on day 3 there is in the morning already a GNSO Council bilateral meeting. And there is a GNSO Council prep session in the evening of the 3rd day, and there is a GNSO Council meeting scheduled on the last day from 10:45 till noon. So it is on the agenda, except that probably there is not enough time to have all these discussions going on. And I'm rather focusing on another point that eventually, we should be able to have a solution, a final proposal that could be implemented for the next elections, which is going to happen in October. So time gets short if we want to get it all cleared out. But again, that's maybe for our next discussion. And I see you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Yes, really, thank you. I think our assumption has been that we want to put both these issues out, the friendly amendments as well as the council election amendments, out at the same time. But I am currently thinking that for the timing that's happening here is the wrong approach. When you look at the amendments to motions language as to which we already have an agreed consensus call, that is language that can affect council business, and it can affect council business in Helsinki, if friendly amendments arise. If there's any chance that the rest of the group might agree that we could put that issue out singly for public comment right now because we have a consensus on it, I would favor going ahead and getting that work done because it is work that applies to the conduct of council business. And then, as you say, coming through to meet any issue that might arise with chair election has to be done by October. But in my mind, there's no reason to hold up the friendly amendments issue, even though it would be better if we could put them out both at the same time for comment and it'd be easier for staff. I think it's better for council if we proceed to get the public comment now on the amendments to motions. Thank you.
Uh, Thank you, Julie, for the transcript. Well, it's a good point, and maybe it's something we would like to do, but I'm referring first to...
Rudy, I think you cut out there, but this is Julie.
Julie.
Okay, great. Thank you. This is Julie Hedlund. So it's not a matter of... we did not suggest to put these operational procedure changes out at the same time because it's easier for staff. It really doesn't make any difference with respect to, to staff resources or anything like that. As a procedural issue, we have indeed done, when there's been multiple changes to the operating procedures that have been ready close to the same time, then we have put them out together. And the reason, one reason to do this is because then we send a package to the council, and what happens when the council approves those changes, they not only approve the changes, they direct staff to produce a revised version of the operational procedures, and then that gets published. And what gets complicated is when you have, revised versions of the operational procedures sort of coming in quick succession. It's cleaner, it's more efficient, and less confusing if, for instance, you have a revision to the operational procedures every, once a year or twice a year or something like that, rather than a revision, which is a big deal because there are many different components to the operational procedures. They all have to be tagged with the new version, version 3.2 in this case, and they also all have to be published separately. The PDP manual is separate. The all the other different manuals and the guidelines are all separate. So so you end up with this really a fairly major revision, as one, now new version of the operational procedures. So you kind of like to try to avoid having these happen, multiple times so that, you're not always coming up with new versions. So that's why we tend to suggest to piggyback these. I didn't mean to go on for so long, but it is more for the community to not be seeing multiple versions of these coming out in relatively quick succession. That's all. Thank you.
Rudy, are you there? I don't know. I think we lost Rudy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Rudy, this is Julie. I think we lost Rudy. I was thinking that I got disconnected. But.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I can appreciate Julie, it's Ann, and for the transcript. I just the situation I wouldn't like to find us in is if amendments to motions come up in the Helsinki meeting and, we don't have something to council and then somebody would say, well, wait a minute, SCI's been working on that for how many months and we're in Helsinki at this meeting and there are amendments to motions and we don't know what to do. What happened to the SCI, Are they falling down on the job? That concerns me a little bit because of the way things went in Argentina, actually. I think that's – Argentina is when this issue came up, I think. And so it does concern me a bit that if we have amendments to motions in Helsinki that that the substance of being able to provide the solution to that is potentially more important than the how many versions of operating procedures are issued, because amendments to motions that is a very substantive issue. There was a lot of disagreement about it and the way it went down in Argentina. I don't know how others feel. Let's see who's still on the call, because I think LaFleurig, are you in the call?
Yes, I am. Hopefully speaking. I just was thinking about, you know, what was happening in the former times is when we put amendments to the rules of procedures to public comment, you know, I think people, you know, in our various constituencies, they rely on the members' position. They had discussions before, forward and backwards in their constituencies. They rely on that. So the comments were, what I recall, there were not many comments on what the procedures are related to. Well, here it may be in this case a little bit different because people are looking for it's about chair election, so they may be keen on to get it right. So that's why I'm also looking forward for a way, you know, to discuss it or at least to inform the council before we go into public comment and exchange some questions. So why shouldn't we do that? As you suggested, via AMO, so well to inform the council, maybe also already next week. You know, there shall be a council meeting, council call next week. The agenda is, I think, there's an agenda out. There should be a way also, well, for information, if we find time, you know, in council, to do so and to just briefly inform the council about the status where we are, and just asking if there are questions. Why shouldn't we do so? So then I would say, and then we go forward as we explored right now, so we're putting the text together and putting out it for consensus call here in the SCI and then up to for public comment, and we comply with the rules of the public comment for 30 or 40 days, how much it should be, and so on. But we should inform the council before that. Thank you.
Thanks, LaFleurig. This is Anne again. I guess if Rudy, are you in the call again? Are you there?
Yes, thank you, Anne. I'm.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll just
I'm
go ahead and
now.
have you chair. I don't know whether LaFleurig was speaking about the second piece of work, I think, which was to do with, you know, touching base with the council about chair elections. I'm not sure. I think he and I were talking about possibly two different things, because I was talking about the matter that we already have out a consensus call for. But and one of the reasons, of course, that I said we might go ahead and put that out for public comment is because I do think LaFleurig is correct that it would be good to consult, you know, with council regarding that chair election issue that he identified. So, but I'll just go ahead and cede to Rudy then, since he's back in the call.
Thank you, and thank you, Wolf Ulrich. Rudy, for the transcript. I agree, it would be nice to have reflections from the council, but as far as I understood, it's a discussion that should be done by the liaison, first of all, by Amr. We should consult with Amr if he is able to do so. The next council meeting is on next week, Thursday the 12th. So if we want to get this on the table for the council, I'm already wondering if we are still in time. I'm just wondering, there is a 10-day waiver, if I'm not wrong, for bringing something forward to the agenda. I want to hear from the group and maybe staff also, if we can present the discussion of the chair and vice chair elections to the council for next week, yes or no? If it's not possible, then we don't need to discuss it. So I don't know if Mary or Julie, you can help me going through it.
Hi, Rudy. This is Julie Hedlund. So I'm just trying to understand this. Yes, as Mary notes, it is too late to get it on next week's Thursday's agenda. But I note that Wolf Ulrich could say that we could put it onto the council list, or AMR could present it to the council list as soon as the consensus call is complete. So that would be yes, 2 weeks from when we get the language out. And indeed, it would be before Helsinki. So you're right, Wolf Ulrich. Then the council would see it on the list before Helsinki. Still unclear whether or not we could get it an update by AMR in Helsinki. Now, this would be an update as opposed to a vote of approval or anything like that, because just for discussion. So yes, I mean, I think what Wolf Ulrich is suggesting could happen. We could, staff will get the language out, but that would mean the language would have to go for consensus call without, that's another question I have. I think I'm a little unclear here. Usually, we present the language, the SAI has the opportunity to discuss it, and then we go to a consensus call. It seems to me here now the suggestion is that we send the language as a consensus call, and then we move directly to consensus call. So I'm a little unclear if that's what people want.
Thank you, Julie, Rudy, for the transcript. Well, I don't want to rush things. It doesn't make any sense to try to rush now, as it will not be on the agenda for next week of the council, first of all, and to get it onto the council for Helsinki, that also needs to wait till we get the consensus call done, so and have the public comments period done. So I would rather propose that we first try to have the final text in front of us, so that all the members of the SEI can agree on that text, and then we proceed with the regular full consensus call that could be done before the Helsinki meeting anyway, and we do a reporting of what we discussed and what we want to get through in Helsinki, if there is time, and then we move to the next phase is handling the public comments. Is that the right way forward? I see, Anne, you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Yeah, really. I'm just, what's still confusing me is whether we all do agree that these two issues have to be bound together. I keep hearing, it's confusing me because, we have already a consensus call on the amendments to motions. And nobody said, well, we need to consult council on that, and that's not been, our practice in the past. But that's probably just because no big issue came up on it. And so, and as Julie points out in chat, it is probably mostly reflective of the current informal practice. But if we put it out for public comment, that would give council the opportunity to, approve it or not approve it, and would deal definitively with amendments to motions in the council operating procedures. If people are saying, well, no, we don't want to do that because we have to put these two issues out together, when in fact, we do want feedback from council with respect to the second issue, I would have to say that it still makes more sense to me to finalize amendments to motions and present it to council for with the public comment.
Thank you, Anne, Rudy, for the transcript. Well, to make it simple, so that I have a clear mind also, your question is, should we already send out the motions and amendments, discussions and proposals, to the public comment, so that we can capture all the public comments coming in from that one, We don't need to finalize it in the way of getting it to the council election, council voting, till we got the second issue handled. So is that the way forward? Is that something that you would like to propose, that we send out the first issue for public comments? We collect the comments and we handle that one separately from the vice chair and chair elections issue, and we then focus on that one.
Yes, my suggestion, this is Dan again, is that in order to avoid the problem of revising operating procedures twice, but still, you know, so that the council knows what's going on, that we could go ahead with the public comment on the amendments to motions, report that to council, you know, before or at Helsinki, with respect to the amendments to motions, and then maybe, you know, as we are working and asking council about the chair elections procedures, then they would be followed by a later comment period, but perhaps the revisions to operating procedures could be done at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Yes, Rudy, for the transcript. Well, I'm just wondering, and probably Julie will help us here, if when we do the public comment for the motions and amendments proposal, is there any timing that we need to respect after we get the comments? Is there a timing that we need to consider for bringing it to the council? Can we wait till we get the second one done? Julie, can you answer that maybe?
So this is Julie Hedlund. So once the comments are done, we could hold making the motion to the council with the all of the revisions of the operating procedures until the elections procedures are also that language is also concluded. But what I'm not understanding is how this would help the council do anything differently with the amendments, because until the formal procedures are published, the only procedures the council would follow is its informal procedures for amendments. It could not follow even what has been put out for public comment as a procedure, because those aren't procedures. Yes, they could be informed of them, but they would not take effect. So it's a little bit unclear then to me what the advantages of putting doing two public comment periods, which at 40 days, then it would be 40 days for that one. That was the other, you know, sort of expediency, was that if we combine the public comment period, you have 40 days for one. In this case, you would have at least 80 days, of course, you know, in the intervening time period. So, and I'm cognizant of the time here for everyone. It's now 14 minutes after. I'm wondering whether or not we could take this question to the list. You know, in the meantime, of course, staff would produce the language for review on the elections. And then, you know, we would have a regular call scheduled for the 19th. It's just still not clear to me the advantage of doing a separate public comment period but then holding up the changes to the operating procedures.
Thank you, Julie, really for the transcript, and I'm thankful for your proposal. Indeed, we have already passed the hour. I would also propose that we take care of this question on the mailing list so that everybody can respond. And Amr is not on the call, so I think it's also important that he can give his input. Let's work that way. Let's try to allow the ICANN staff to work on the text, the final text that needs to be proposed. Unfortunately, the 19th, I will not be available, so I'm just wondering, or we take another day and would be the week after the 19th, only that I would be available, or Anne would take the chair of the SCI meeting. So I don't know, Anne, could you eventually take the lead for that call?
Yes, thank you, Rudy. I am able to chair on the 19th. I would not be able to attend the meeting on the week after, but so it's, you know, whatever you want to do.
Okay.
I think that it's just...
Well, I'm sure that you can handle that call anyway. I will just not be available the 19th. I discovered that I'm that day I'm away and I will not have easy connection at that time. So I propose that we try to end this call, this meeting here, with the proposal that ICANN staff will provide the adapted text of the Section 2.2 on the mailing list. We have a discussion about sending out together or separately for public comments. That's the other question. And we then schedule for the meeting on the 19th of May. Is that a way forward? Can we agree on that one? I don't see or hear any objections. So I would propose that we then schedule the meeting for the 19th of May. And meanwhile, we will see the input coming from probably from Amr about the proposed discussions we had on having the comments, the public comments period for both together or separately. So sorry that it took so long, but I think it was important that we had that discussion to have a clear view on the next process. If there is no other business, I would then close this meeting. And see you on the next, or perhaps at the council meeting, I could listen into it. So have a nice evening. It was a nice afternoon. And
thank you, Rudy.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Today's meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recording and disconnect.